Hello, welcome to another episode of Agile Uprising. Today is another conversation in the ORSC Lab series. I'll be your host, Leslie Morse, and my guest today is Nacia Miller. Nacia is a facilitator, educator, relationship systems coach, and a life coach that is based in Chicago. Nace, thanks for being with me today.
I am very excited to be here. Let's do this.
And you know, let's just be totally transparent. We recorded about half of this episode earlier today, and our decision was we were going to channel disruption is ally as a meta skill to service. And here we are starting over from square one again. So disruption is definitely serving us. I'm not entirely sure yet quite how it's an ally, but I think that's going to emerge over the course of this discussion.
I totally agree. And yeah. I was channeling that a little, just being like, okay, who knows? You know, disturbance can really feel frustrating, and really leaning into what's possible.
Yeah. So I think the thing that we'll be mourning a little bit is that Andrew Leff, one of the other ORSC Lab members and folks from the Agile Uprising Coalition, was able to join us when we were together earlier, but he's not with us now. So I think he'll be a ghost in this conversation.
Yeah, we'll bring him in.
Yes. So before we get into the discussion, let's kind of redesign, because we had designed a little bit of an alliance and talked about what meta skills we wanted to have service, but let's sort of do that again now that it's just you and me. So what kind of design team alliance do we need between us to make sure that this is a successful episode today?
I'd like to bring some playfulness into it.
Okay. Playful. What would playful look like to you?
Something around jumping off of each other. Like there's a collaborative element to it calling me. And I think just like you were mentioning that you have some punchiness in you right now, and your jaw's already hurting from smiling. So I don't know, more of that energy, you know, it's later in the day. Like, let's bring it.
Yeah. I love that. And I mean, play is one of the things I'm really passionate about. I'm always looking at how to bring that into my work. And there's such a youthful exuberance and a quality of like every conversation I ever have with you feels like it's climbing on a jungle gym. And then I'm stretching and I'm going further and exploring places I've never really been before. So that's what I think of when I think of play in relation to like how we're going to explore the conversation.
I love that. And one other thing is an element of curiosity, risk-taking. I think the topic that we're going to be jumping into is one that can feel elusive, can sometimes be challenging to grapple. And so leaning into it with that element of curiosity and a little excitement of what it is, what's there, I think could really add to our conversation.
Yeah. And I almost want to just kind of pause for a second. We've thrown out so many concepts and we're kind of designing real time, which I think is one of the benefits of doing it as part of the episode, because then people can see what this is like in real time. But like, you know, curiosity, play, exploration, like ping ponging, stretching, all these things, like listeners, I almost want you to like take a minute and be like, how can you channel some of those same ideas for how you want to listen and experience this episode today? Like, how might those ideas serve you?
Yeah. Can I yes and that?
Yeah.
And once you're done listening, where might you take this into your own life or into the world wearing that hat of either play or curiosity or stretch?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. That's a great invitation. Let's be sure to kind of bring that back as we get towards the end of our discussion today. We could run into some pitfalls. Like, I even already think about some of the words we've used already. And the risk of us getting too jargon heavy, like that could be a pitfall in the discussion. What are other things that might trip us up?
The conversation feeling real and us not knowing where it's going to go, because it can feel personal.
Oh, yeah. Well, how might we know that's happening?
That's a great question. I think what's happening right now with me, which is not necessarily knowing what to say next.
Yeah. Well, I think so. For me, if we start feeling that, like, silence is okay. Mm-hmm. Like, take a beat.
Yeah.
It's play can be slow and exploration can be slow. It's like, I might need to really think about that answer. Like, don't be rushed to respond.
That's great.
And I might not be rushed to ask you the next question.
Yeah. And with the jargon, let's name it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that'll be really important. Hey, can you explain that? Let's deepen that. Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else about if the conversation kind of gets difficult or we're feeling tripped up as we go along? What would serve us well then?
Let's laugh.
Okay. Hold it lightly.
Yeah.
It's a play. Like, let's use play.
Yeah.
In service of us.
Yeah.
That's great. Awesome. Well, thank you for kind of just leaning into that. Anything else we want to say about design before we get into the content?
Let's do it.
All right. So as part of this Orsk Lab series, I really love to be able to just share with listeners what it is that kind of turned you on to Orsk in the first place, why you chose being trained in organization relationship systems coaching as a professional coaching method. And kind of, I guess you could think of it as your origin story with Orsk. So please share that with us, Nace.
Yeah. So I got turned on to Orsk and found out about it from my own personal coach, who was just a one-on-one, doing one-on-one work with me. And from hearing some of my professional pursuits and what I really, you know, felt where my impact would play in the world and what type of coach I wanted to be, that's when she told me about Orsk. So she was using these tools on me throughout our time together without even mentioning anything about Orsk until I started really talking about that I wanted to work with groups, that I wanted to do work with communities. And so that's, and really thinking about the brilliance of relationships being the core of what I believe is the connection and belonging and what makes life worth it. That's when I got turned onto it, all from my original coach.
That's cool. And getting to experience it before learning about it, I think is really kind of a cool opportunity, because it's like, oh yeah, I remember when I did that as the client, and now like understanding the backstory behind it was probably pretty fascinating. Were there any kind of aha moments you had along your learning journey that sort of created clarity or anything for you?
Yeah, I think in general, and the key for me is having my own experience before I then enter into something, let's say professionally. And that's been that way for me in my full trajectory, so that I'm not selling or trying to convince or prove anything to anyone about a product or a service or whatever. It's really from my own experience where I had an impact. It had an impact on me. I was impacted, and then I can share from it. But there are definitely things that once I was being trained in this work that I was like, oh, that's what she was doing with me. And one of my favorite things that she did with me, which now I do with my clients, is having conversation with a future self, which is this idea that you actually go into a kind of a guided meditation or visualization, kind of close your eyes and are walked through an experience that then you are literally having a conversation with yourself in 20 years, kind of inside your head. And it is one of the most powerful experiences. And then learning about some of that after I experienced it myself was just like mind blowing.
That's really cool. And I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't give a nod to the agilist sort of aspect of, you know, at least the perspective I bring to Orsk work and how I apply most of my Orsk training is in the context of, you know, agile and agile situations. But that very first line of the Agile Manifesto is, right, we're uncovering better ways of delivering software, delivering value by doing it ourselves and helping others do it too. And I do think that like what you're really pointing to there is that kind of baseline part of our vision is like, we're doing this work ourselves and we're helping others do it. And I think that's such an important part of just developing yourself as a coach.
Yeah, it's a game changer.
Yeah, it really is. And I think could be an entire episode and topic of exploration on its own. There is there is something else here that I'm finding myself curious about, because I think a lot of folks that especially are our listeners, like, identify sort of as agilists first, and then like, oh, I happen to find the calling of learning about professional coaching, or I'm adopting coaching skills in my work that I do within the whole agile space. What was it like being, so you're someone that was just called to the work of being a professional coach. Like, how did that fire emerge in your belly?
It's a great question. And it definitely something that emerged over time. I would say that growing up, I was what I called like hypersensitive, oversensitive, the sensitive one. And it was something that I felt was a weakness of mine until I got older and realized, oh, wow, that's my superpower. Like, I have this thing. I didn't know that other people don't have it, or other people that don't have it, like, this is something I can use for good. Yeah. And so it was just constant. I just had a lot of stops along the way to really figure out how I could support people in feeling a real sense of connection to themselves and other people in their lives in all their different types of relationships, both personal and professional. And I'm just a fierce champion. I mean, you know me. And so once I kind of heard about this emerging field, it clicked. I was always doing things along the way, different facilitations and informal education. And this was just like, got it. This just was all the different strengths of mine put together.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, and what a gift that is, right? You know, to find a body of work to really embrace as a profession, right? And a craft to hone. Like, we think about, you know, Dan Pink's autonomy, mastery, and purpose, like the purpose piece of it. Like you're like a lighthouse that radiates like purpose driven life. And I knew that the moment I met you. So I love that you're able to kind of bring that gift to the world.
Thank you. That means a lot. My intern laughs at me every time we do our weekly call. She's like, you're just so excited about everything we're working on. And I always link it back to our mission, every single thing, even when it can feel so task oriented.
Yeah. And I think that is such, being purpose driven is such a core aspect of maintaining that motivation and excitement, especially if we think about like the current kind of societal and relationship constraints we're operating within, you know, in this kind of global pandemic. And it's just holding strong and true to that can be really difficult when the minutiae of living our day-to-day lives in a different way is challenging.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's sort of an interesting segue to, right, when we set up the context of this episode and wanted to invite you to be part of it, it's really because you've got amazing passion around an ORSC concept called time spirits, which is sort of elusive and edgy and difficult to really grasp. Like, I haven't done a ton of work with time spirits, right? Andrew and Billy, that are also part of the ORSC lab, haven't done a ton of work with time spirits. And so because it's kind of so essency, I don't think it really infiltrates some of our corporate coaching style work that we do as often. And that was really the impetus for wanting to bring you in here, because you're so, I think, eloquent in describing its value and its purpose and really building that awareness. So I'm really excited that you're bringing that forward as your agenda for us today. So I really want to give you the floor to set the context for what is time spirits, why you use them, why you think they're important, and why they should matter and be on other people's radar.
That's awesome. I'm smiling because the edginess and the difficulty of it is what totally drew me to it.
And oddly, I feel none of that edge present right here. I feel totally comfortable in this discussion, which is great.
Yeah. I think, I definitely do hope that we hit edges though.
Yeah.
Which can just feel like you're at the top of a cliff and you're not, I'm just trying to articulate what an edge might feel like.
And
not sure what it takes to get over it, but you know, you want to get over it.
Yeah. Or it's like, sometimes it's when that feeling of discomfort is a signal of something trying to happen.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Like that's a great, an indicator that there is an edge. It doesn't mean that you have to cross it.
Right.
But that just edge is in that moment.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah. Right. All right. So you've got the floor. Great. Time spirits. Tell us about it.
And I'm going to take us one step back before we hit time spirits, just to give you a little bit more context about where this even fits in, which is it's this idea that in our relationships, there is this concept of ghosts. And so you can just imagine whether you put on, you can imagine either a personal relationship you're in or a professional, and there's you and those people, one or many. And ghosts are a third party that's not actually present, but it's impacting the relationship. So in a professional sense and setting, it would be a CEO that is no longer present. There's a new one, but there's still the ghost of the past CEO, or a merger or acquisition. It's the ghost of the past, you know, business that you had without, you know, without that merger. An employee that's no longer there, but you still feel their strong presence in some way. And it can be an impact in positive or negative ways. And in personal relationships, it can be a ghost of an ex or a ghost of a past financial security, because you don't have it now and it's impacting the relationship.
Or it could be even like the ghost of us being just in relationship with each other prior to having kids and the way we were prior to being parents, and that haunting us in either a positive or negative kind of way.
Yeah, exactly. And that's key, I think, is that it can impact positive or negatively, but if we don't actually know it's even there, it's affecting our relationship and it's just taking us for a ride. And so the key is bringing our awareness to these ghosts. And so this one ghost, this kind of bigger ghost that we're going to be talking about today, is this idea of time spirits. And the way I like to think about it is it's a ghost that's impacting society at large in some way. It's impacting more than just you and your relationship. It's impacting potentially even generations past. So it's
like the Great Depression.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, and it's like, it's a cultural ghost. And so things like racism, homophobia, sexism, anti-Semitism, terrorism are kind of these big examples. And those are all ones that are really charged and are not positive.
Yeah.
But really are affecting so many people throughout generations. There are also positive ones too. Which I will say for another time, but it's not just the negative ones, but we can just talk even now about knowing if you can even think about things that you really care about that are some of these things, even some of the ones that I mentioned. And what happens when time spirits are present is the person that's kind of wearing the time spirit or talking for it, so to speak, is actually not just talking for themselves, but feel as though they're talking for generations past.
Yeah.
So the one for example, the one that's kind of standing up for, let's say, racism is standing up for so many generations past that were affected by racism. And so I'm not just standing up for me. I'm not just standing up. I'm standing up for generations past. And so it becomes something much bigger than just ourselves.
It really is the one of the most pure manifestations around a voice of the system, right? So many times when, you know, I even think about a meeting that I've had, you know, recently where there were some people talking, but not all people were talking. And there became a lull in the conversation. And I said, just raise your hand if someone else has said something that you thought about saying yourself, or that you totally identified with. And like all but two people's hand went up. I'm like, that is right. The voice of the system. You don't need to exude those words yourself for that content to emerge.
Right.
And when a time spirit's really, to almost use that word you talk about, ghost, like when it almost possesses someone and they're yeah. really stepping into what that time spirit is, they are speaking on behalf of
right
society in many ways.
Right. Right. Yeah. And you asked before why I'm passionate about it, why I care about this. And this is seriously my favorite tool in ORSC is I think this is such a connector of humanity. It's something that isn't just my own personal experience that then I need to work through or explain. It's something that really connects so many people and generations past. And that idea, that interconnectedness of us is something that I feel really passionate about. So it has the potential, I believe, to really isolate loneliness and polarization.
Yeah.
At the same time, it can also bring that in a huge way, because when you can imagine when you get possessed kind of by something, when that charge takes on, there's a lot of times it shows up really aggressive and defensive.
It can trigger people.
Totally.
Like you can get hooked by a time spirit and it's almost like you're in a trance. I mean, possession, being possessed by it is almost a word. It's like, I find myself speaking and saying all these things that may not feel 100% me,
right.
But those generations past are almost speaking through me.
That's right. Because you are really standing for something.
Yeah.
And so, I also believe that there are a lot of positive ones, but just something, let's just talk about right now in the world. We're in the middle of a pandemic.
Yep.
We've been in this shelter in place piece of this for the last few months with the entire world.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've never felt so connected to people that live across the world that I have through this.
Yeah, unified shared experience of loneliness or isolation.
Right.
You know, there's never a question of like, am I the only one dealing with this?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think there's actually two things happening here. And this is happening in real time. So let's see how articulate this comes out. But I think there's two things happening as we're experiencing this corona COVID-19 pandemic, which is number one is there are certain time spirits that people are experiencing from the past. So certain moments in time, like the 1918 flu pandemic that happened, that people are referencing a ton, watching what happened during those phases. Was there a second wave? And people then bringing that energy into what's happening now. People that had, you know, lost a ton of money in the 2008 stock market crash.
And reliving that
and then being really careful about their money. People are now thinking about how much money they should have, they should be saving at a time because of who knows, something might like this might happen again. So it's really creating, it's something right intergenerational that's now, we're bringing some of that back into our experience that's happening now that happened to so many people.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually, and when we were recording a version of this episode before and getting ready for our prep conversation, I had referenced, you know, the time spirit of the 9/11 tragedy, especially as it relates to travel. And so many of us that build our careers and our social lives on the ability to travel, and how travel before and after 9/11 like changed for forever. And so like we will look at this pandemic as travel will probably never be the same as it was.
That's right.
Before Corona. So not only are time spirits from the past sort of like impacting us and how we're experiencing this now, but we are living in the midst of creating a time spirit that will hijack us years in the future.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I would just love to ask you, what is, and let's just play this out and see where this goes. What's something for you right now? Like, what's a primary story or experience you're having that you feel is affected from the pandemic?
There are, I mean, this goes kind of deep, but when you ask me that question, the first thing I think about is being an only child and being lonely and isolated. And I'm not saying that like I had a bad childhood that was lonely and isolated, but I mean, there were just naturally times like my parents were busy and I didn't happen to grow up in a neighborhood that had a whole bunch of other kids. So like I was just kind of, there were times where I was just sort of by myself a lot. And so like, there are times where like I hearken back on that in terms of the kind of like being by myself and like the longing to want to go play with somebody and see my friends, but I can't. And back then it was because like my parents couldn't take me and they were busy doing something. And now it's like this metaphorical societal parents are saying I can't go do that. So that's sort of like a thing that's present and haunting me now.
Yeah, that's definitely, and I would say that that's not as much of a time spirit, but as a personal ghost that's now coming back during this experience, which is pretty wild. And I can imagine just taking that example, and we just fast forward a number of years, and there's an experience where people need to stay home for some reason. People are in lockdown or quarantine, even for a safety issue that's happening that is not a pandemic, right? Yeah. Like, and so you can imagine that then some of these feelings might be charged and then come back as like that time spirit of the corona pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What are stories that you can share with us about how you've used time spirits in your work with clients? I mean, I know obviously in coaching relationships, those are confidential, but like ways that you can make this really practical about how you use this in order to help advance a client's agenda.
Sure. So I'm actually just going to focus in on one, because what I think, and I want to pull something from what we were just talking about, which is that it can feel negative a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And that word haunting can feel negative, even though it's like,
but Casper's a friendly ghost that haunts
you. There
you
go. So I think it's also about naming that. And so the way that I really enjoy using it is, and this can be with groups that either know each other or don't know each other, is giving people an experience to think about, and there's so many ways to make this happen. I like to do it through a visualization experience, through closing your eyes and leading you through my words, through an experience, to really think about what you take a stand for in your life. What are the things that you will stand up and defend when something shows up in your life that's the opposite? What will you, you'll just do anything to support something. And that's a really great way to start feeling some time spirits that might live in you sometimes, that might come and visit. They're dynamic, so they don't stick with us.
Yeah, yeah. Listening to you talk about that, it reminds me of in another episode of the Orsk Lab stuff we've done here with Agile Uprising. We've actually in several episodes, we've really unpacked the three levels of reality in a couple different ways, right? So consensus reality, the very tactical things that you experience on a day-to-day basis, the things you do, right? Dreaming, sort of the way you make up that things might be, or stories we tell ourselves about what's going on with someone else. And then right beneath that, the essence or that visceral sort of just reaction and feeling that comes along with ideas, that almost when you put words to it, it starts chasing it away. And I do think we experience time spirits at that essence level. Like that's when we know they're present and is sort of an indicator of it. And so what it makes me think of is the time that I spent with the Accenture Solutions IQ community, ultimately through a series of acquisitions, like 8 years, you know, of my career. And those moments when it was like you'd be with people and it feel like it was back when it was only 12 of us. And so in that instance, it was like the time spirit of when we were Davis Base sort of overwhelms you. And it's a nostalgia sometimes when the time spirit's positive that you're like, how do we harness it and keep more of that and kind of curate it into what's going on now?
Yeah.
Can be a way that you can work with this, which makes me then rethink, like think a little bit about like bringing down the vision or reclaiming the high dream, can be adjacent kind of ORSC tools that you can use around time spirits that have that positive connotation when you want them to haunt us.
Right.
More often because they invite more generative qualities in the system that we're part of now.
Yeah.
And does that all sound right to you?
So I just want to tweak something you said. So yeah. The example that you gave, I would say, is a ghost more than a time spirit.
And so, see, you're right. I've said that like this eludes me a little bit. So like distinguishing between the two.
Yeah. I'll give you an example.
It's hard for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give you an example. Something that happens a lot with a family member of mine is I will find myself defending women a lot and like holding the space for women when I don't feel like there's a voice there that's feeling equal. So that would be an example of a time spirit coming over me because it might not matter to me what they're saying. It could be kind of callous, but there's something that I need to defend and stand for because I feel like I'm standing for all the women behind me that weren't respected, that didn't feel equal. So that's a time spirit because it's affecting, it's a cultural impact.
Yeah.
It's affecting it society at large versus just a specific relationship.
Yeah.
And for me also, I'm very connected to my Jewish religion, heritage, culture, background, all of it.
Right.
And so there's tons of time spirits that I hold. Both positive and challenging, negative, yep. Challenging. I wouldn't even say negative, around Holocaust.
Yeah.
And family members that lost their lives and money and homes and all this stuff. And some of that stuff shows up and where I feel a need to defend or that shows up through me. And some really amazing, beautiful things around how I hold tradition really strongly. And that being from a time spirit of generations past.
Yeah.
So those are some examples of how it can live through where it feels like this energy of this strong energy that you want to champion, that you want to take a stand for, and that you kind of want to defend in a certain way is how it kind of might feel.
Yeah. So what can we offer listeners around like when you're feeling sort of the presence of the time spirit, like how to work with it in the moment?
Yeah.
And what value that has in sort of strengthening the qualities of relationship.
Yeah. So I would say similarly to when we get triggered, it's very challenging when the trigger is happening. You can all think of times where you're triggered and then people want to say things to you. You're not really in a place to hear it then.
Yep.
I would say the biggest piece is bringing the awareness when you're not triggered, when the time spirit isn't present, so that you can actually build an intentional and sustainable, you know, framework to support you when it is. So I would say number one is just the awareness that this happens and the awareness that it happens for you, the awareness that it happens for other people in your life. So when you can start seeing it, suddenly that person that's defending this thing that you're like, whoa, get away from me. You realize, oh wait, they don't even realize that they're talking from a time spirit.
Yeah.
And so just the fact, just that awareness, I would say is humongous. And if you can start just becoming aware of that, and then it will take the charge. I believe that this is why I care so much about it, because I believe that if we can start bringing our awareness to it happening for us and other people, and we take the charge off of it and actually listen for what the wisdom is, because the reason it's showing up is because it has something to say that's really important. way that it's said oftentimes, because it can feel like you're defending something or you're threatened. That's like what it feels. It's threatened. So if we can take the charge off of being threatened and really hear the wisdom for what it's trying to say, oh, women should be equal. Okay, that's what it's trying to say. Okay, how can then I articulate that differently, where it's about the wisdom and not the threat?
Yeah. And thank you for listening to this episode of the ORSC Lab on Agile Uprising. You can always follow the hashtag ORSC, O-R-S-C, on Twitter to join in on the conversation. And don't forget to subscribe to Agile Uprising on iTunes or your other favorite podcast provider so you can get notifications of new episodes as soon as they're available. Talk to you next time.